we've been away, Andrew and I have been listening to podcasts in our hotel room in Thailand of the Atmosphere series that we've been engaging in as a church. He's enjoyed it. And I love the fact that it is speaking to the truth that we are not subject to the atmospheres, and we're not living with this worldview where we just have to come under the spirits of the middle world or whatever, or that we have to capitulate to an atmosphere in our workplace or our home, but that we have influence and we can command the atmosphere and rule the atmosphere and influence it in a positive way for God. We can usher in atmospheres, we can rebuke atmospheres, we can actually have influence over it. And this morning I want to talk about an atmosphere, a place of atmospheres that affects every single life in this room. And it's the atmosphere of the home. And it's one of the most influential atmospheres, because whether you are a teen living at home with mum and dad, or a 30-something living at home with mum and dad, not that there's anything wrong with that, or whether you are a married couple without children, or whether you are a single girl flatting with your mates, whatever your stage or situation of life is, a widowed person, whatever it is, home can be, and the atmospheres of the home can be, the closest to life or death, I reckon, you experience in life. And so I believe that God has a very clear blueprint for what home is meant to be. And it looks different for each and every person. It's not prescriptive, but it's meant to do some things in your world. So what's home meant to be? I really believe biblically it's meant to be a sanctuary, a place of sanctuary and presence, a way to retreat from the pressures of life. It's a place of safety, a place to sense the presence of God away from the distractions of life. It's a place of instruction and discipline. It's like a microcosm of learning in life before you send out into the big wide world. It's, for married couples, a place of relational intimacy and sexual fulfillment. You're not meant to be looking outside of the home for that and finding that. You're meant to be cultivating it and developing it in your home. It's a place of sacrificial love and grace where the worst is seen and covered and the best is celebrated. It's a place to try new things in an atmosphere without judgment and an atmosphere of safety. I love the picture in the Bible of Anna the prophetess, and she was widowed very early in her life. We can ascertain in that culture, it might have even been within her late teens. And she decided to make the temple of God her home. And she remained single for the rest of her years, and she prayed and interceded and made that home an atmosphere that ushered in the Messiah ultimately, because she met as an old lady Jesus Christ as a baby in the temple. And so to me, it's a picture of what as a single person you can do to actually dominate and rule and influence and cultivate the atmosphere of your home. It's a place of growth in an environment of encouragement. And as Dave Reardon often said, it is a place that is your first church. It is the first expression of your worship to God and the first place you exercise godly dominion. And it's meant to be, you know, it's meant to house atmospheres at the most fundamental level. Life. It's meant to promote life at the most basic and elemental level. Now, lest you check out and go, well, I'm not married with kids. I wanted to say my story is not necessarily the average, although I don't actually think there's an average story anymore. I think there is such diverse situations in a church like ours that, you know, my story was that up until 21, I lived in my family home that had very variable atmospheres, sometimes aggressive. It had a lot of sickness in it. My mum was in and out of hospital. My dad was not a Christian, although a very beautiful man, and invested a lot into me. And the atmospheres were very variable. 21 to 37, I was flooding with friends in different situations, and I did not wait until I was married to cultivate an atmosphere in my home, because I tell you what, if I waited, I'd be waiting a lot of years. But by 37, I married my husband, and we're now in a different phase of life and in a different kind of home, and we're cultivating atmospheres that we really believe that God would have in our home. So I don't want to confine home to married with kids, because it's actually not the typical situation necessarily, and it's very limiting. I also want to cancel any thought right now in this room that if your home isn't perfect, that this doesn't relate to you and the canvas you're working with sucks, and so this You know, that's great for the married couple with 2.5 kids and a lovely dog in the backyard. It's not going to work for me. I just want to say there's two women in history that really inspire me in terms of working with the imperfection and allowing God's perfection to dominate the atmosphere. And that is Susanna Wesley, one who was married to a loser, basically. And he was in and out of jail. He was a drunkard. And she had many children in a tiny, tiny home. And her way of dominating the atmosphere is she'd throw her apron over her head and pray in the kitchen. The kids knew not to disturb her when she was doing that. And she ultimately raised two revivalists, Charles and, thank you, I'm having a mental blank, John Wesley. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. I love that guy. And lo and behold, my brain goes blank. There is Lydia Prince, who I love this woman. She was a single woman, top of the pile in education in Denmark, top of the state. And she, as a single woman, got saved at 36 and turned her apartment into an atmosphere of faith and prayer that ultimately affected nations. So she was baptized in the Holy Spirit and ultimately in those times called to the mission field of Israel before modern day Israel was born, actually. And she was called by God to be a watchman on the wall, a prayer at a time that a nation was having a massive transition in the late 1940s. And so I just want to encourage you, whatever your state, whatever your situation, this relates to you. God has got something to say to you this morning about the atmosphere of your home. Now, Paul himself was absolutely crazy about the home atmosphere in the sense of it just figures heavily in his writing, different home situations. For example, and I'm not getting into the teaching of this, it presents hours upon hours of teaching and I'm not even going there. You want to get out to lunch and so do I. And it's complicated, but Ephesians 5 and 6 addresses the Greco-Roman household that had come to Christ. And with it, a shift of power had taken place. So where the householder, the man, the head of the household, was the God at the time, and their household was a large and complex network of children, a wife, the householder, slaves. It was layers and layers of community in this large household. As he, as the household God or head of the household, subjected himself to this crucified Jew called Jesus Christ, it was not only a huge shame, but a powerful shift in the atmosphere in the home, a godly shift. And a shift of power took place from one to another. And Paul actually gives them a loving and lengthy unpack of not how to dismantle the structure of their home, not how to change the particulars and slave you go back, God hates that kind of thing, but actually how to let the life of the Spirit pour into the household as it is and see the atmosphere changed, essentially. And that's where that scripture, you know, don't get drunk on wine but be filled with the Spirit, is actually the context of that. You know, we quote that sort of thing, but he's saying, hey, don't let the source of your home be that anymore. Don't let it be this, but let the Spirit flood in and change the atmosphere, change the human relationships within this place, and the atmosphere will be changed forever. He spoke often to it, and though we can't copy-paste what happened then onto now, and we're not meant to, it's a different society, and though there are principles, God wants to speak in the same way to call us to a holy atmosphere in our day and age, in our homes. It is actually the nucleus of a larger Christian community. It's the first place, our home, that we live out the life of the Spirit, and it is the first place where the Christian life has to be put into practice, and my gosh, sometimes I think it's the hardest. I was saying in the previous service, I remember coming to like revival type meetings as a teenager in Shire Live, or what was called Christian Growth Centre and various other editions at the time, and dreading going home on a Sunday night because it felt like nothing ever changed sometimes, and like God actually trained me and taught me how to actually influence the atmosphere of my home in sometimes what was a very difficult situation. With this in mind, you know, Paul also says in 1 Timothy 3, you know, taking the home atmosphere so seriously, that it was a prerequisite for deacons, a certain type of service in the church, to have their home life in order in order that they might serve in that particular capacity in the church, because Paul was so aware that the atmospheres in the home will spill over into the atmospheres in the church. It's not a question. It will. It just does. And so it was a prerequisite. And I love this next thing. He speaks to the home of Timothy, you know, his up-and-coming protege, and says one of the key reasons why Timothy has faith and is serving the Lord as a leader and an apostle in ministry is that Lois, his grandma, and Eunice, his mother, built an atmosphere of faith in the home around him. I think that is incredibly powerful. So this morning, there is a call and an invitation to transform the atmosphere of our homes by the Spirit of God. And I want to look at some areas this morning that they're not comprehensive, but I believe there are a few ways in which the atmosphere of our home is influenced and set and determined by us, that God would give us agency, that God would trust us to have an influence over the atmospheres of our home so that life can flow, so that it can be an atmosphere that supports life no matter what your household currently looks like. Who's with me this morning? All right, the first thing I want to speak to is the fact that your words frame worlds. When it comes to your home, your words frame worlds. I'm a lover of language and I enjoy looking at patterns in language. I studied it as part of my degree at uni, and I'm really grateful for a husband that has the same appreciation, and working with a team like Jared and Sarah that just are lyricist in the highest degree. But words play a huge role in the creation account of the world in Genesis 1. And I want to take you through a couple of observations that I saw this week and in my study and preparation for this message. And I want to look at three key observations about the types of words used in creation. So let's take a drive-through tour of Genesis 1. Firstly, I want to talk about that incredible speech, which is declaration speech, speaking out that which is not into existence. It is actually really hard to fathom with the human finite brain, isn't it? That you can speak into the nothingness and something will appear. It's incredible. It's creative speech. Genesis 1:3. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. So out of nothing, he speaks light into existence, and it's one of many examples in that six-day creation. And then secondly, so there is the speech that creates out of nothing. Then secondly, there is the speech that seems to bring order to what already exists. So Genesis 1:6 says, "Then God said, 'Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters.' Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so." Genesis 1:9, "Then God said, 'Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear.' And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas." You see, it's the speech that makes sense of things that already exist and brings order, parameter, discipline, meaning and structure so that life can flow. God's like, "It is not enough that I spoke water into existence. Water needs meaning and purpose. Water needs to be separated. Its functions need to be defined so that life can flow." Thirdly, there is the speech that sets in motion a creative process. So it's not just speaking into existence the light or the water, but there is a third type of speech in this account that sets in motion something that unlocks potential. And though it might be hidden, though it might be something that remains dormant for many years even, it unlocks a process that ultimately, sure as hen's eggs, you can be sure that it will produce fruit. Genesis 1:11. Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth. And it was so. It's the speech that sets in motion a process that begins a life of fruitfulness and reproduction. A word that unlocks something that though it remains hidden for a long time, it will burst forth in fruit. And this morning, as people in homes and families, as single people flatting with flatmates, I believe that we are co-creators with God. The biblical pattern is that we are in partnership as co-creators with God to have dominion, to set in order, to create. As people with dominion over the atmospheres of our home, we are meant to speak God's language over our atmospheres. Not some other foreign language of negativity, not some other language of silence at times, but the language that God speaks over his creation. We're actually meant to speak into existence that which is not. We're meant to bring order over those things that are disordered in our home life. We're actually meant to unlock the creative potential in our husbands, our wives, our flatmates, our children, so that it bears fruit for many seasons to come. You know, and so often we're discouraged about what we see in our home and we forget that out of nothing, God created, ordered, and set in motion a creative process. You know, and it baffles me at times then, knowing that as Spirit-filled believers, we then turn around and choose to speak to our spouse in a certain way, in that foreign language that is so foreign to how God spoke of creation, how we declare over our children, and at times the self-talk over our own life when we're alone at home, that internal dialogue that is bringing the atmosphere down in a way that we fathom not, the way we speak to our parents. You know, we have the power to cultivate the airwaves of our home with our words. And you know what? Whether or not you realize that, each and every one of us engages, for better or worse, in a creative action that has the power to create, order, and unlock a creative process. Words frame the world of your home. Allow your words to create an atmosphere of life in your home. So words frame worlds. But you see, the second thought is altars create orbits, things that life revolves around. Altars create orbits. In Paul's Ephesian church, a shift had taken place where instead of the paternal head of the household system being the household God, Christ was given lordship, and an altar had shifted. One object of worship had ceased and a new object of worship had taken that person's place. You know, our hearts are actually created to worship. There is something innate in you that longs to worship, to give time and attention and adoration to something. You're created to worship. The question is, what is worshipped in your home? Now, I am not talking about what you attempted to fill out on your census form on Tuesday night. I'm actually talking about a different kind of worship other than nailing your religion on that form. I'm talking about what is given priority in your home. What consumes time? What has preeminence in your home? What do other things orbit and shift around in the home to get around that thing, and what dominates the atmosphere? The story I'm about to tell you, I tell very sensitively because it's a parenting story, and who knows, for every piece of parenting advice, there is 2 billion other pieces, right? Any parent ever been approached in a shopping centre by a complete stranger on how to raise your kid or how not to raise your kid? I don't want to be that person, okay? So please read my story as our particular situation, because I don't in any way want to bring judgment or even imply that there is an orthodox way that I'm speaking about this morning for you to parent, because you are all good and wise parents and I know you seek the right wisdom for you. But when we arrived back from Thailand into Sydney, Oliver had become used to sleeping in his porta cot in our hotel room with us. He liked being part of our conversation. He liked enjoying hearing us breathing and being in the same room. He liked being carried in his baby pouch everywhere on Daddy's chest. He's too heavy for me to carry anymore in the baby pouch. He enjoyed falling asleep on us in transit in airports. He loved the attention he was getting from us. Frankly, he had mega doses of Daddy and Mummy, and he did not want to give that up to return to the normal rhythms of life in Sydney. Andrew and I, in this cocktail of family events, were very, very sick this week with a gastro bug, our special souvenir. And we weren't in any state to do sleep retraining, so we just capitulated to Oliver's way for the first three long, unpleasant nights with Oliver in our bed between us. We've never done it before. So, wriggling baby, kicking my back. And by night four, I was done. Our sleep was being stolen. Our nighttime conversation, which is our way of connecting before we go to bed, was being stolen. And for goodness sake, my sanity was being stolen. So I steeled myself. I got a couple of girlfriends praying, and Andrew and I committed for the next three nights to cry it out and comfort and get him in his own darn cot again. And we succeeded. Thank you. Thank you, Doobie. Thank you. And order restored to our home. And for us, and I don't want to create a doctrine out of this, but for us, it was a small wake-up call, no pun intended, of just how easily the order in our home could have begun to orbit the altar of our baby or any other thing that wants to remove godly dominion and order in a home. And my question to you this morning is, what is the altar of your home? It may not look like the household god of the Greco-Roman world, but you do have an altar in your home. Is the TV the family altar? Are the kids the demigods of the house? Jared, that's a telling laugh. I think we've all felt like that at times, haven't we? Show of hands. Is Dad's inability to manage his anger and his emotions what all else orbits around in your family home? Is Mum's control issues what has everyone ducking and weaving and orbiting around that thing? Is the low road of convenience what your life orbits around, whatever the heck you feel like at any given time, rather than the higher principle of worship of Almighty God? Is that what your home orbits around? Can I just say, no matter who you are, whether you are the guy or girl flatting with flatmates, whether you are the mum and dad, whether you are a widowed person, whether you are a single parent here, no matter who you are given authority over your home. And just like the household Paul speaks to in Ephesians 5 and 6 saw a shift in altars, you too can see a shift in altars in your family home. You can change the atmosphere by guarding your altar. So words frame worlds. Altars create orbits. And finally, influences empower atmospheres. My mum, all the family stories are coming out this morning. It's that kind of morning, isn't it? My mum had a very difficult life in many respects, and if I told you from beginning to end, I believe even the hardest hearts in the room would be moved. She had an extremely difficult life, but one thing she did incredibly well is she was in many ways an extremely diligent parent. I remember clearly two very embarrassing episodes that later as an adult I came to respect very, very deeply. And the first, I think, was brave. Over the course of a fortnight, I think I was in year one and going to a local public school at the time. And I would catch the bus from the school to my house in Bangor. And Over the course of a fortnight, my mum observed that my behaviour and my confidence had changed and that the atmosphere of our home had been affected by that. Being the mum she is, she dug a little deeper, had a few vulnerable nighttime conversations, and she ascertained that every day for the last fortnight on the bus, my face was being slapped by a boy that was 1 or 2 years older than me, and he was terrorising me on the bus every day on the ride home from school. Well, my mum would have none of that, so she just put me on the bus at school, or sent me to school, told me to catch the bus as normal on the way home, and she waited at the bus stop. And when it came to my stop, she jumped on the bus, singled the boy out, laid her hand on his shoulder, this is before child protection, and told him very clearly and simply so he would understand that if he ever did it again, his life wouldn't be worth living. What she did essentially, however, was she cut terror off in my world and cut that influence off in our home. She was onto it. She was watching the influences in our home. The second was gutsy, I think, in hindsight. In my year three class, as teachers often do, a story was being read or a chapter book was being read day by day. The problem was, in my mum's mind, is this particular book was about witches and she did not want that influence in our family home. So my mum simply and politely went up to the school. She didn't challenge the teacher about reading it. She made no comment on the values or the choice of reading. She simply asked that I be removed from the class and sent to the library when the reading was going on. You can imagine how I felt about this at the time. But she did not want that influence in our home. You know, Song of Solomon puts it like this, and in your life is similar. Song of Solomon 2:15. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in full bloom. You know, your home, whatever type of home it is meant to be a vineyard that sustains life, that is full of fruit, that is bearing fruit in its season, that has a creative process going on, that is tended to as a vineyard would be, is a thing of aesthetic beauty, is a thing of inspiration and joy and encouragement. And yet there are foxes and influences. You see, altars are big strongholds. Influences can simply be sneaky and subtle influences that taint the fruitful atmospheres of your home. And you know what? You are the gatekeeper of the influences in your home. You are the gatekeeper over the atmosphere of your home. For us, it looks like this. We limit TV. We don't cut it out completely. We do see some value in TV and media. We actually value, but we are careful and we limit. We're protective about who comes in and out. We are a hospitality home. One of our core values as a family is we want to be generous and increasingly generous with hospitality. But we're also very sensitive to the rhythms of our family life and what's required at any given time and how people coming in and out can affect what we're seeking to build. We want to cultivate the order of our home so that there is not influences of disorder in the mix. And we want to allow worship and prayer to permeate our walls as a family. I'll never forget when I house sat as a single person, how impacting this issue of influences became on me. I remember house sitting an older lady's home, and she was in inner city Sydney, and I house sat this terrace. It was a great joy. I did it for 3 months, and I remember going to uni from there. It was a great joy, but I noticed when I walked into her room and she was off holidaying in Europe for 3 months, how it felt prayed in. Her room felt prayed in. The atmosphere was set by the influence of her prayer. You know, your home can be similarly populated, and your home atmospheres can be strongly influenced by the input of prayer and worship in your home. You know, when I was living out of home as a single, which was most of my adult life to date, I tried to resolve conflict quickly with flatmates so that conflict didn't influence the atmosphere. I decided I wanted to live big for God and cultivated atmospheres of worship in my bedroom, even if the main part of the house wasn't mine to decide the complete atmosphere. And I was strategic about the influences in my life. You know, parents, I want to say to you this morning, and this is specifically for parents, the hand that rocks the cradle still rules the world. Do not be fooled and intimidated by a technological generation or a litigious generation that is trying to threaten and intimidate you out of being the primary influence in your child's life. Research still tells us parents are the primary single influence in their child's life. And so take hold of it and use it. The atmosphere that you create around your child's life can be carried into the broader world to be used powerfully by God. You know, as the worship band comes up, I want to bring a word of encouragement. You know, many of us are discouraged about our home atmospheres, but I really believe that the word of the Lord is to shine alive today, that there is hope for your home. There is hope for your home. And God is not finished with you, that God has purposes and plans for your home. And God desires that we build atmospheres that are fruitful in our home, because it is so key to what he wants to do in our church, in our city, in our nation, in the nations of the world. It actually stems from the home. If you look at the succession of spiritual warfare in Ephesians through the chapters and trace it for yourself, it goes from healthy family to healthy city, to healthy nation, to healthy world. There is a succession that as you allow the influences of the Holy Spirit, as you allow God to dominate the atmosphere of your home life in whatever stage or situation you are, because it is about the moving of the Spirit in the atmosphere of your home, not about the particular structure that you have. God will touch the world as we allow his atmospheres invade our home. You know, this morning, we can talk about principles, and they are godly ones. They're ones I really believe that God would have us implement in our homes. But God, I really believe, wants to breathe on it and actually speak his grace into situations and empower us and grace us to do these things, because he values your home. He sees your situation and he has specific things that he wants to percolate in your heart. So for the next minute or two, we're just going to sing this amazing grace and allow God to do a work in us and prepare us as we begin to influence the atmospheres of our home.